Sure. Do you think? Sarah frowned, leaving the last of it unsaid.
No,
Silver replied. I've been trying to message Lux to get someone down here, but it keeps kicking back my messages. It isn't just her.
Caden understood the concern in Silver's voice, and why she'd be asking for help so quickly. Safe zones, such as the one encompassing the entirety of Ilo, were intended to be more or less immutable. You couldn't attack someone in a safe zone without a duel request, nor could you steal from another player or do any of a few dozen other negative things, including forcible teleportation. Players that did so suffered anything from terms and conditions violations to straight up being attacked and killed by the Emperor's guard if they resisted. Safe zones were safe. At least, they should be.
It is off-floor messaging, Caden chimed in moments before a playfully pleasant tone sounded off from Sarah's device as his message arrived. Under other circumstances, the fact that she used that as his ringtone might raise some eyebrows, but high school-level gossip was not particularly high on anyone's list of priorities.
Messaging on floor works, but you can't contact anyone on another floor, he frowned, pushing a few more keys before he added. Or outside of the tower.
So we're cut off?
Shifty asked with immediate concern.
Looks that way, Caden frowned.
Maybe people can leave the floor, either through the teleport crystal or just physically walking.
How about we worry about that once we figure out what the hell just happened? Celia said.
Easy for you to say. Some of us have lives outside of this damn...
Shifty, it will be fine, okay? Caden said, reaching out to put a hand on the other man's shoulder. It's probably temporary, and even if it isn't, your kids will be fine until it gets sorted out.
The reassuring words did little to ease the stress evident on the older man's face. Caden had yet to meet Shifty's children, but from what he'd seen of them, the two precocious youngsters were as mischievous as their father. They lived outside of the game with their grandmother, half a world away in Italy, but it was impossible to miss how close they were to their father's heart. Shifty wasn't like Celia or Silver. He'd taken a job with Vitalita to pay his bills, and he'd stuck with Caden for a similar reason, selling the trade goods and crafting components he came across to support his children back home. To be cut off from them entirely was a nightmare.
So what do we think happened?
Silver asked. Whatever argument they'd been in the midst of was forgotten. The once bleary-eyed girl was sober and attentive. Silence reigned in response to her question as their little group racked their brains over the issue. Around them, a handful of other players appeared to be pondering similar questions, whispering back and forth with one another. When the very rules of Babel seemed to have been broken, knowing who you could trust was at a sudden premium.
What level was Simbal?
Caden asked, the small number of players in the once bustling tavern having sparked an epiphany of sorts.
Sarah
replied, thinking on it for a moment.
Two? Maybe three, I think?
Caden nodded. It made sense with his theory, but he'd need more than a single anecdote to be sure. He hefted his shield arm, then bashed the rounded bottom edge of it against the table as hard as he could, striking it three times until he had the attention of everyone in the room.
Show of hands! Who here is lower than level 20?
A few hands raised in response to his question, though many of them faltered as their owners realized that their companions were staring warily at Caden. It was a foolish way to phrase the question, he realized. People here were paranoid enough without giving them a reason to think he'd been sizing them up.
Fine, he shouted. Did anyone higher than level 20 disappear?
This time, the response was a little better. The various players looked at one another to be sure, exchanged muted words, then eventually a few groups gave some indication in the positive.
Level 15 to 20?
He asked again. This time the answer came back negative.
Level 10 to 15?
Again, nothing.
Level 5 to 10?
There it was. Hands started to rise throughout all of the varied groups of players. He had to ask a few more questions, but within half a minute, they all knew at least one vital aspect of what had happened.
Players lower than 10th level or higher than 20th had all been teleported off the floor. Players 6 or higher had ended up on the 3rd floor. Anyone lower had ended up on the 1st.
"A floor event?" Caden asked, at last, his voice lowered to keep this particular musing to himself and his cohorts.
"Looks that way," Silver frowned.
"Okay, pretend I don't know what you're talking about," Shifty said, clearly annoyed. "Because I don't know what you're talking about."
"A floor event is," Caden shrugged, "kinda what it sounds like."
As Shifty's face tightened into an angry grimace, he quickly expanded his answer.
"There have been 2 so far, floor 33 and floor 42. Players activate a trigger that begins the event. Once they do, the floor is locked down, and the players have to complete whatever challenge they are faced with in order to reconnect with the outside world."
"So we're trapped here," Shifty said. "For how long?"
This time it was Silver's turn to break the bad news.
"No way to tell until we get more information. The 33 event lasted a little over a day and a half. The 42.
"How long?"
Caden winced.
"A little over a month and a half,"
Shifty swore under his breath.
"Shouldn't we have gotten some system notification then?"
Celia asked. Silver shook her head.
"Events aren't like that. They're a little more theatrical."
As if on cue, the sound of a bell ringing echoed into the Inn of the Dizzy Sheep from the street outside. A voice accompanied every few chimes of the bell, a man shouting in his most authoritative tones.
"The mighty Duke Elazio de Medicis, ruler of Ilo and beloved of the great emperor, commands the immediate presence of all bloodline descendants at the ducal palace within the hour."
The bell chimed again, the same voice shouting the words louder than before as he drew closer. Booted footsteps of the town guard accompanied him, and, in the distance, the players could just barely hear the bells and voices of similar criers going about their business throughout the city. Several of the other small pockets of players seemed to have come to the same realization as Caden and company, if only judging by the paleness of their faces. A floor event was nothing to scoff at. Fatalities for the Floor 42 event had been exceptionally high and, in this case, it was hard to know just what to expect. There had never been a floor event on a floor anywhere near this low, let alone one that required the removal of all low-level players from the floor.
"Might as well get going," Caden called out, at last, sounding more confident than he felt. "The sooner we get this event dealt with, the better, right?"
A small murmur of agreement rippled through the assembled players, accompanied by a few sharp glares from players who didn't like the suggestion that they were following someone else's lead. It didn't matter to Caden, because he meant what he said. If this were anything like previous events, it wouldn't start in earnest until a critical mass of players had assembled as requested. Slowly but surely, the various throngs of players began to shuffle towards the inn doors. Many of them took one final swig of ale or shot of hard liquor as they left their tables. Caden couldn't blame them. If anything, this was going to be a hell of a night to try and deal with sober. The Ducal Palace was among the most opulent structures in all of Ilo, second only to the Temple of the Great Emperor. It was a place Caden had, until recently, only seen from afar. There were a large number of quests that took players there, of course, but his routing and the somewhat unique circumstances of his early days in Babel had conspired never to give him a reason to visit. In some ways, he was glad. He could see relative boredom on the faces of many of his fellow players as they made their way down carpeted hallways adorned with marble busts, framed portraits, and all manner of esoteric trinkets the Duke's ancestors had collected over the years. Some of them had probably walked this hallway half a dozen times, or more, delivering fetch quests to and fro, so it was little wonder they had lost all sense of awe. Caden, at least, got to enjoy a certain feeling of gravitas as he joined over 50 of his fellow players on their walk to the Duke's audience chamber. The room itself was massive, easily able to accommodate them despite their numbers. Tables and chairs had been set out, but many players chose to stand or to linger along the edges of the room. Nearly everyone had retained their armor, though many, like Caden, had stowed their weapons for the time being. With their equipment on display, it was easy for Caden to narrow down some facts about the players around him. The type of armor by itself was enough to narrow down the class options for a given player, and even its overall quality could suggest a lot. Not for the first time, Caden was thankful that Silver didn't keep to the sort of ostentatious displays of power that some high-level players enjoyed. There were no foot-long shoulder pads on her armor or spinning orbs of arcane might that would tell people just how powerful she was. Instead, she wore the same armor she had when he'd first met her. A full-body black suit of leather and more unique fabrics covered her from head to toe, its outline trimmed in the same red as the heavy red cloak that typically concealed everything beneath. The Duke's empty throne awaited his arrival upon the upraised dais at the front of the room. His Eminence had left them waiting for the better part of a half hour, more than enough time for Caden to get a good read on a sizable amount of his fellow players. Upon their arrival at the palace, the players had divided into roughly four separate types. First were the solo or group players like Caden and his fellows, players who might have a couple of friends or at best a full party. Second were the guildies, roughly 20 in total over two distinct guilds. They had arrived in two clumps of players that had been hard to miss. Then there were the corporate players, farmers, caravan guards, and the like. They were a ragtag bunch equipped in anything from best-in-slot gear for their level to barely above beginner equipment depending on their role. And finally, and most worrisome, there were the toy soldiers. It had taken most world governments less than a few weeks to realize the immediate national security implications posed by Babel. Some of those concerns were rather blatant. A person with the ability to wish for whatever they wanted could wish for world domination as readily as he could wish for world peace, but even the subtle ones were of grave concern. A nation that had to rely on a third party for Albioth steel could find themselves with a critical shortage of metal for new airframes or tank armor. Relying on Vitalita for medical components could backfire in the event of an armed conflict, and so on. The result was the toy soldiers, a somewhat derogatory term coined as a catch-all for state-sponsored players. For some, like the soldiers on the far end of the room, it was accurate. Young men and women hired as soldiers, but tasked with fighting a very different sort of battle. But there were also diplomatic corps, roguish special forces, and non-combatants that still fell under the same term. If a government sent you to Babel, you were a toy soldier. Technically, there were two separate groups, a party of five Americans and a much larger group of Israelis, but it was only the second that worried him. The Israeli contingent numbered nearly a full third of all players in the audience chamber, and unlike some of the more lax behavior he had seen among their ilk, these particular soldiers still held their full military discipline. They stood at ease in five ranks, their commander walking up and down the lines of them, stopping here and there to speak to a soldier before carrying on. Caden didn't know what to make of her. She was pushing 30, and if she had ever been a pretty woman, that time had long ago since passed. Her black hair was shaven down to a little more than a stubble that peeked out from beneath the beret she wore. Her face was studded with acne, her skin an angry red despite her calm demeanor. What struck him most was the air about her, a confident presence and sense of authority that was hard to quantify as her squat, dominant form traced its way back and forth through the line of her troops, chainmail clanking with each step. If this was like the other two floor events, everyone in this room was going to have to work together. That was going to be fun, in the dwarf fortress sense of the word, anyways. Caden's thoughts were interrupted as a loud proclamation broke through the dim hum of conversation.
"Ladies and gentlemen, His Royal Eminence, Elazio de Medicis!"
All eyes turned forward with the announcement, just as the Duke's bodyguards came into view. They were imposing figures, men of muscle and sinew clad in gleaming mail who walked with military precision, flanking the four corners of their ward. The man they guarded, or rather, the boy, was rather less intimidating. It was hard to be intimidating when you were 12. A titter of laughter ran through the room, including a not-quite-suppressed giggle from Celia. Even Caden, who knew what to expect, had a hard time not cracking a smile at the sight of the dark-haired, gray-skinned tween surrounded by his enormous bodyguards. It just looked silly. A child trying his best to look regal and important while not yet topping 5 feet. If the crowd's reaction bothered the young Duke, the boy didn't let it show. Elazio had a stern poker face as he crossed the room, ascended the dais, and settled down onto his throne, his guards taking up positions at the foot of the stairs and on either side of him. The previous buzz of conversation was muted as the young aristocrat surveyed the assembled players with that same stern expression, waiting until nearly every word had died off on their lips before starting with his own.
"We thank you all for responding so quickly and promptly to our summons, particularly considering the late hour."
The child began with the best impression of a regal tone his high-pitched voice could manage.
"Reports have trickled in suggesting that most of you already realize that something is amiss. So in the interest of time, we will be dispensing with the normal protocol and formality of such an event, and instead getting to the heart of the matter immediately. 6 hours ago, the court's high seer, Agamarang, suffered a powerful vision that left him blind and on the verge of death. Before his passing, he was able to relate enough of the vision's cryptic details to warn us of what was to come."
The Duke's expression grew as stern as the boy could manage. His eyes narrowed as he glared at the assembled players.
"One among your kind has disturbed the wardens of the Lyre King."
The name sent a ripple throughout the crowd, but it was mainly one of confusion. Few players recognized the name. Among Caden's band, only Silver and himself showed any immediate recognition. That wasn't a surprise. Babel had backstory every bit as expansive as the lore and history of reality, so only someone who had played for ages, or someone who was an obsessive nerd, would know much about the relatively obscure name. For those who did know, however, it was troubling. The Lyre King was one of the 7 kings who had defied the Great Emperor in his ascension to power over all of Babel. The stories claimed that he was a massive trickster, a manipulator without equal who spun plots within plots. He was far weaker than the Great Emperor in personal, magical, and military might, but among the most dangerous of all his foes solely because of his intellect. The armies of the Emperor marched on his castle, only to find it empty and their fields and dominions plundered in their absence, or met him in combat just to see the battlefield arrayed with magical traps. Whatever the situation, the Lyre King somehow twisted it to his advantage. Legends told that the Great Emperor slew the Lyre King on no less than 12 occasions. 2 times he was left for dead on the field of battle. 1 time he was thrown from a cliff face, while his supposed final death was a brutal public execution. After the last, the Great Emperor had the body split and dismembered, its pieces taken throughout the tower and concealed in tombs and prisons beneath the earth, so that any attempt to revive the Lyre King would prove an impossible task. It had failed, of course. The same legends said that the Lyre King had reappeared a century later, albeit less than he once was, content to work from the shadows instead of opposing the Great Emperor directly. At the time he'd read it, Caden thought the whole thing sounded like a cool premise for a quest chain. Now, he was slightly more dubious.
"We do not know what was done to disturb them, whether something was taken or some sacrilege was laid. What we do know is that even as we speak, the wardens stir,"
the royal continued.
If any of you know the ones responsible, this is perhaps our only chance to easily rectify the mistake.
The words hung in the still air of the audience chamber, with the soft shuffling of feet and whispers of conversation as their only reply. The young man let them linger there longer than necessary, as if somehow hoping that those responsible would be pressured into honesty by the delay before at last he spoke.
Pity. Our cousin is holding a similar meeting in Sune, so with luck, the responsible party will be located there, but we suspect not. Accordingly, we shall begin preparations sooner rather than later.
The assembled players exchanged looks with one another, but the Duke pressed on.
In his wisdom, the great emperor crafted an army to serve as the eternal guardians of the Lyre King. These wardens were to keep him forever imprisoned, but I fear that they now do us more harm than good. None of the scouts or envoys we have sent to investigate the tomb have returned,
the Duke said, a frown showing on his face for the first time.
The great emperor charged our family with assisting the wardens during times of trouble, but between our losses and Agamarang's vision, we fear that they are not what they once were, that they do not recognize friend from foe.
You ever get the feeling that the great emperor isn't exactly good at long-term planning?
Sarah quipped.
We suspect you are all aware that the floor had been locked. This was a precaution against a resurgence of the Lyre King. It was intended to keep him trapped here so that his wardens could deal with him should he escape. The floor will remain locked until we can return the wardens to their rest, which is why we've summoned you all here.
A number of replies, some far from polite, swelled out of the crowd. They threatened to shout down whatever the young man had to say before his guards began to pound the stone floor with the butts of their pole arms, demanding silence and attention as only armed men could do.
The danger posed by the wardens is immense and will grow as they awaken fully. By ourselves, I believe the Elan will fall. By yourselves, the bloodlines, the humans, will fall.
The boy stood, his eyes scanning the crowd.
Only together will we have the capability to endure and find a solution for what is to come.
Chapter 4. In a real video game, the speech would have been part of a cut scene, accompanied by a swell of intense music as the crowd built itself into a frenzy of cheers and a grand alliance was forged. In reality, the line was met with distrust and unease. Would it be dangerous? What did the Duke want them to do? Enlist? Such questions passed from person to person, as the Duke stood awkwardly at the front of the room. He'd obviously expected a different reaction, and for just a brief moment, it looked like the young man might cry before he tightened his expression, firmed his resolve, and continued to speak.
Who amongst you is the strongest?
There was a little back and forth among various groups, no doubt trying to guess if they were the top dogs in the room, and who among them was the best of the best. Caden didn't have any such problem. He knew his party contained the strongest.
Right here,
he shouted, gesturing to Silver with the index fingers of both hands. The Duke studied her for a moment. Young eyes narrowed as he shook his head.
No, not her. She has much potential power, but her power is restricted at the moment. Next to her.
Hmm?
Sarah said softly as Caden turned his fingers to point at her.
Oh, no. Nuh-uh.
My eyes are not wrong on this,
the Duke replied. He was still studying her, and this time there was no mistaking the soft, incredibly thin line that glowed around the gray skin at the edges of his eyes.
Your eyes are not wrong, but I want no part of this, my lord. I'm retired,
Sarah replied.
Did you just call him the Lord?
Celia asked quietly.
No,
Sarah replied.
You totally did, didn't she, Shifty?
The rogue nodded to the question, grinning ear from ear. The grin only grew as Sarah attempted to surreptitiously swat at the laughing blonde.
You don't even know what I would ask of you. I'm just a waitress, sir,
Sarah preemptively countered in her most measured tone.
There are better selections. I promise you. You then,
the Duke said, gesturing this time to Celia.
Me?
The girl said, surprised. She wasn't the only one. The look of shock from both Caden and Shifty set her skin blushing, the girl unable to meet their eyes for several long seconds before she added softly,
I've been grinding in the evenings. I didn't want you guys to feel like I was just dead weight.
Before either man could voice their objection to the absurdity of her worry or their annoyance at being left in the dark, Elazio cut in once again.
Yes, you! I would offer you the... Sorry, but no,
Celia replied.
You don't even know what you are being offered,
the Duke replied with some irritation.
I know, but Caden is my party leader. If you are offering us something, offer it to him.
The Duke nodded, but instead of turning his attention to Caden, he instead focused to the far end of the room where a single young man lingered.
You then, sir?
The man said nothing for a moment, only turning his head once the sudden lack of conversation became notable. When he realized he was being addressed, he laughed a nervous laugh, snapped his fingers to close out of whatever display had been distracting him, and turned to face the Duke. He was a handsome man. That much would have been clear to Caden if Celia and Sarah weren't all but drooling open-mouthed at the sight of him. He must have been a late arrival, because Caden didn't recognize him from his earlier look around, and he would have been hard to miss. For one thing, he was tall, standing 2 or 3 inches over Caden, though he was equally wide in the shoulders. His body appeared to be built out of nothing but the muscle in a way that would have looked normal in an MMO, but was rather out of sorts for the typical player in Babel. He dressed to complement his chiseled good looks, the top button of his tunic opened to reveal a bit of the broad chest beneath, while his long dark hair was pulled back from his face in a loose ponytail, save for a few stray strands fell to tickle his jawline. He was among the room's only unarmed occupants, someone who was apparently not entirely rattled by the imminent danger.
I'm afraid I'm going to have to pass as well, the man replied in a firm voice that would have suited a man a decade older than his 18 or perhaps 19 years. Solo player. Probably better to give your investment to someone with some allies.
He nodded toward Celia, who almost swooned at the attention.
Girl seems to have the right idea.
The Duke was visibly furious, perhaps one step away from a full-on childish tantrum. Of course, a tantrum was probably more appropriate for a child his age than many of the things he'd already said and done.
And you, Caden, was it?
It is, he replied.
I offer you the temporary rank of Field Marshal,
Elazio said, with as much gravitas as he could muster, given the situation.
To be charged with the defense and rebuilding of Bastion, with 500 Elon soldiers under your command.
Caden's eyes widened at the offer. He'd never considered himself even a particularly useful armchair general, let alone someone who would be expected to lead soldiers into battle. Yet before he could even begin to formulate a reply, a rough voice lashed out from across the chamber.
You entrust him with 500 men? Are you mad? He is a child.
It was the woman from before. He knew even before he looked. The leader of the toy soldiers. Considering the context, he couldn't exactly blame her for her anger, even if his own swelled at her words.
A child who is stronger than you, apparently,
the Duke shot back with cold rebuke. It wasn't hard to see precisely what part of her complaint the child ruler had a problem with.
Higher level, perhaps,
the woman continued, unabated, reaching for the hilt of her sword.
I'll be happy to lay him low if that will change your mind.
The threat, even one directed at a player rather than their liege, was enough to spur Elazio's bodyguards into action. The four men closed ranks around the young sovereign, their weapons at the ready in a way that gave even the trained soldier second thoughts. Ultimately, however, it was the Duke who defused the situation. He waved his hands, urging away his guards with one and directing the woman's hand away from the hilt of her weapon with the other.
We have more than enough dangers to focus on outside these walls. He is not the only one I would offer such a position to. Someone will need to lead the defense of Ilo itself, after all.
The implicit offer seemed to mollify her, lessening the overall tension long enough for the Duke to continue to distribute his offers and titles. In the end, five players, Caden included, ended up being given titles. The distribution fell roughly along the same sort of splits he'd noted when he'd first arrived, with no group or party being assigned more than a single task to manage. The commander of the toy soldiers, Ash, was named captain of the Ilo Watch, expanding the ranks of her 25 players to include a number 10 times that in Elon Guardsmen. The two guilds turned out to be the Lords of the Edge and Goon Squad. Each was given the title of Knight Captain, a keep with a terribly familiar name, Crossroads and Dearnis, respectively, and 100 soldiers to manage and defend the countryside. Finally, the corporate guild turned out to be Celeste Metal's employees, all of whom seemed more than happy to be put in charge of a small defensive outpost between Islo and Sune, and the 50 men that came along with it, even if their leader balked at being a mere lieutenant.
We have been told that the bloodline families have a common device to communicate with one another at great distances. Is that correct?
The Duke asked in the aftermath of distributing the various titles. After receiving nods or verbal agreement from each of his newly minted officers, he continued.
I expect you to use it. I know you are diverse, and most of you are not soldiers by nature. Many of you would balk at being ordered, but we can ill afford feuds.
His look to Ash and Caden could not have been more pointed if it had come at the tip of a spear. Even so, the toy soldier did not attempt to bridge the gap between them. It fell to Caden to walk the short distance, his hand outstretched. The soldier lingered far longer than was polite before taking his grip, her rough fingers squeezing his hand to the point he worried she'd start doing HP damage if she didn't let up.
Excellent! Our staff will provide you with all the necessary information.
The Duke turned to leave, his bodyguards forming in tight alongside him as he added, almost offhandedly,
Field Marshal? A word!
Daddy's calling.
Ash said with a smirk, finally releasing his hand.
Keep you and yours out of our way, and we'll tolerate you, boy.
Caden longed to reply, but a combination of the Duke's brisk departure and a lack of a witty response made him hold his tongue. Instead, he smiled, a grin that twisted her face into a rictus of irritation that persisted long after he'd set off to try and catch up to the child ruler.
Sir,
Caden said as he fell into step beside Elazio, trying not to laugh at the absurdity of it.
Or, is there something I should be calling you?
In formal situations, Duke, Sire, or any number of proper titles would be appropriate. In private, Elazio or El will suffice,
the young man replied, offering Caden a genuine smile. After an audience, where the boy had been forced to keep a stern or impassive expression, it was almost unnerving to see a normal, childish grin.
Caden is fine?
Yeah. No one calls me Kay, though.
I'll endeavor to remember that,
El replied. They walked beside one another in silence for much of the corridor, the sound of clanking metal and his bodyguard's booted steps filling the void left by the absence of their words. As they reached the corner, and it became clear that the Duke wasn't going to continue, Caden spoke once again.
You asked to speak to me?
Yes,
the boy nodded.
Forgive me. I just wanted to collect myself.
No problem. That had to have been rough, especially at your age.
The child ruler looked up sharply, eyes as gray as his skin fiercely catching hold of Caden's. He didn't say anything, just kept that gaze steadily on Caden until at last the young man relented, holding his hands up in surrender.
Forget I said anything.
L laughed, the humor flooding his eyes so quickly that it was clear he'd been on the verge of laughter through most of his staring contest.
You don't get the throne in Ilo by being weak, even as a child.
Caden frowned. He knew the history of Babel, especially the lower levels, and the sad fact was that the way you get the throne in Ilo was by being explicitly designed to fill that role. Babel was so real that sometimes it was hard to remember that all the lore, all the quests, even all the Elon were as much fabrications as the physical tower itself. The event might have a player-based trigger, but the actions Elazio had just taken? That was programming, wasn't it? 1,000 soldiers divided so every significant group of players had some stake in the war aspect that appeared to be the event's gimmick. The wardens weren't somehow corrupted by the Liar King. They were created solely to be part of this event. The thought made him shudder. There were Elon rights activists for a reason. Apart from skin, eye, or hair color, most Elon were functionally indistinguishable from humans. But if they were designed specifically for things like this, to take specific actions in regards to a predefined event, well, that made them different from a human, didn't it? Did they even have free will at that point? Elazio was staring at him. A thought for another time.
Probably not, Caden admitted at last. So, what did you need?
Oh, yes,
the kid laughed, halting in his tracks.
You've never commanded troops in battle, have you?
Does StarCraft count?
I...
Don't get the reference. Don't worry, it ha-
No, I get it. I just don't think it applies,
Elazio interrupted.
Wait, what?
Caden asked.
I'm royalty. People constantly try to curry favor with me. About a year ago, someone brought me one of your laptops and showed me how to play a few games on it.
An NPC playing a video game. Pretty sure the developer didn't program him to do that.
That is actually kind of cool. But yeah, no, I don't have any experience.
Elazio nodded.
I expected as much. I will be sending one of my most trusted men along with you to Bastion to serve as your military advisor. Would this be amenable to you?
Absolutely. All the help I can get.
Then you'll be accepting Roberta's help as well,
the Duke said with a self-satisfied smile. Roberta?
My lead engineer. She will serve you in that role as well as a civic role as mayor of the town. Assuming you decide to put effort into repopulating the walled town around the keep itself.
Honestly, hadn't given it much thought. Still trying to soak this in.
Soak quickly,
the young boy replied.
Your task is most crucial of all.
Caden frowned.
I assume you're going to explain why a keep I've never heard of needs more defenders than your city?
Perceptive,
Elazio mused, joining Caden in his worried expression.
A moment more.
Their path carried them through a set of large double doors into an opulent library that made Caden wince in spite of himself, then through another set of equally opulent doors into a much smaller chamber. A man awaited them there, standing at full attention in heavy plate. He was perhaps the most ridiculous Elon Caden had yet laid eyes on. His navy blue skin might have looked all right on such a severe man, but the short crop of hot pink hair atop his head would have been absurd even if it wasn't matched by the similarly offensively bright waxed mustache. It was a small miracle Caden didn't break down laughing at the sight of him. Was he a glitch? Or had the developer just randomized the colors of the various Elon and this poor bastard got the short end of the stick? The soldier stood in front of a mirrored table. No, not a mirrored table, but a mirror table. It was nearly 10 feet long and 4 feet across at its widest point, but the dusky purple surface was unmistakable. A display table, a mirror like the one in his back pocket, though writ quite a bit larger.
Valseris!
The Duke nodded as they entered, his composure tightening once more as the boy left and the Duke returned.
My lord,
the man responded without hesitation.
I have prepared the surface as you requested. Is this the one?
Not my first, second, or even third choice,
Elazio replied, clearly fighting down a smirk.
But he will do. Caden, this is Valseris del Terramezzo. He is the military attaché I spoke to you about.
Pleasure,
Caden said, stammering the last half of the word as Valseris chose the same moment to speak the same words. The two exchanged looks and a hint of a smirk before the Duke continued.
Show him!
The soldier reached out and stroked the edge of the mirror with a gloved hand, causing its surface to glow with life. Displayed upon it was what appeared to be an aerial view of the entirety of Babel's second floor, though it quickly zoomed in to focus on the most critical areas. Some had their names written plainly on the screen, while Caden knew from experience that touching others would give him additional information. It was, after all, the same map he could pull up on his mirror. The only thing that seemed out of the ordinary to Caden was a glowing circle on the far end of the map, miles removed from Ilo, Sune, or any of the other locations he knew well.
This is the area where we believe the Tomb of the Lyre King to be located, Valseris explained. Even now we have scribes and scouts endeavoring to confirm and narrow down the specific location, but we are fairly certain that our initial estimate is accurate to within roughly 30 miles.
Why do you think that? Caden asked.
Our initial estimates were based on information contained in the ducal libraries. Recent events have confirmed the general location.
The general touched his mustache as he looked to the Duke, as if uncertain about precisely how much detail he should give, continuing only after a nod from the young boy.
2 villages in the area were found burned to the ground before we lost contact with our scouts. Given estimates of the land speed of the Warden army, we have a fair amount of confidence that this is the location of the tomb.
So the plan is what exactly? Go kick their door down? The pink-haired soldier shook his head.
With everything we know, the military consensus is that a frontal attack would be suicidal. The Wardens were charged with suppressing a rival to the Great Emperor himself. As a military force, they must be mighty indeed.
Our plan, as it stands, is to defend our lands while we discover the cause of their awakening,
the Duke explained.
If we can rectify what has disturbed them, it should mollify the army and allow them to return to their slumber.
And if we can't? Caden cocked his head to one side. The Duke smiled wanly.
My scholars tell me that the full army is reputed to number in the thousands, though even that is not our largest concern.
On cue, Valseris touched a point on the map. It sat with both Sune and Ilo between it and the Tomb of the Lyre King, with a glowing call-out on the map labeling it as Bastion.
We cannot be sure of the Warden's intentions, so we have to assume the worst, that the Wardens believe they have failed entirely in their task to restrain the Lyre King.
Elazio swallowed hard, drawing a path along the map with his finger as he spoke.
If this is the case, then the Wardens will muster, fighting off any threats as they gather in strength before finally making it for Bastion.
Why there? Caden asked, though he suspected he had an idea of the answer.
The keep is home to the final sanction. The last recourse should all else fail. The warrior.
Valseris brushed his fingers along the edge of the screen once again to show an illustration of a figure. It looked childlike at first glance, curled up into a fetal ball. But the longer Caden looked, the worse it became. The figure was stone, a soldier rather than a child, one clad in ornate oriental armor. What had looked like toys at first blush were buildings, siege equipment, and full-grown men and women. It was a giant stone soldier. Quite the fitting name.
Should the wardens breach into the throne room of Bastion, they can awaken the warrior with little more than a touch, Valseris explained.
And if they do? Caden asked, though he'd played enough video games to know the answer. Elazio answered anyways.
Then the warrior will kill every man, woman, and child on this floor.
Chapter 5.
Anyone else feel like we're going to end up fighting Dracula before the night is over?
Most of Caden's party were usually pretty on the ball with his references, so it came as a bit of surprise that Michael was the only one who appeared to get it. The new addition to their party hummed bloody tears to himself as they advanced on the castle gate. A point in the man's favor, Caden supposed.
Caden still wasn't sure what to think of Michael, the ruggedly handsome solo player who had turned down command of Bastion in favor of letting it fall to Caden's party instead. He knew what the gals in his party thought of him, though, if only because it was all but impossible to ignore the way Sarah and Celia had fawned over him in the lead-up to the teleportation that had left them less than a mile from Bastion. Only Silver appeared to have been immune, the ever-serious mage too busy in her plotting to give Michael much more than a cursory smile. In the 20 minutes Caden had spent with Duke Elazio, the solo player had managed to ingratiate himself to both Celia and, to Caden's surprise, Shifty as well. By the time Caden returned, the three of them were laughing like good friends, and no amount of reasoning or excuses could convince either of them that Michael would be anything but an asset to their party. Admittedly, Caden lacked any good angles of attack. Michael was of a comparable level, with a DPS focus that fit well into the open space of their party. Worse yet, his build, once it was explained to Caden, was pretty well thought out. At first glance, a dozen levels in a tanking class like Juggernaut should have disqualified him, but once Michael explained its interaction with the abilities of his other class levels, well, even Caden had to admit he was impressed. Grudgingly. So why didn't he like the guy? Was it just something as simple as petty jealousy? Everyone fell for that from time to time. Right?
No, not me. Never. Caden thought to himself with a roll of his eyes.
He could figure out things with Michael later. Right now, they had a very, very large fish to fry.
Not on any maps I've got, not even the internal guild ones, Silver said from the back of the line.
So it is safe to say that it probably didn't exist until this morning, Michael replied before Caden could.
Which was pretty much what we figured, Caden continued his thought anyways. Guess we're going to have to clear it the hard way.
I'd feel a lot safer doing it if Sarah was with us,
Celia chimed in.
Wouldn't we all, he replied.
Despite pleading from Celia, and slightly more dignified requests from the others, the waitress remained resolute in her earlier position. She was retired as an adventurer. Besides, she'd said, who would watch the dizzy sheep if she was off gallivanting around?
No help for it, Caden continued, glancing over his shoulder. Anything we should be concerned about?
Roberta and Valseris took a moment to glance at one another as if exchanging information and deciding which would be the one to speak all in a single look. It was Roberta who drew the short straw. Elazio's lead engineer was nothing like what Caden had expected, though admittedly it was hard to narrow down exactly what he had expected in the first place. A petite and slender woman of perhaps 50, Roberta stood head and shoulders below Caden at just under 5 feet in height, though one could never tell it from the presence she exuded. Roberta was as strong-willed as she was tiny. While her voice wasn't deep, she made up for it with an air of authority, a curt tone that spoke of nobility.
Uncertain as of yet, Field Marshal.
Uncertain? Shifty asked.
Legend has it that the upper floors of the keep are replete with powerful guardians,
Roberta explained.
But most of them are tethered to their locations and should present no threat to you unless you seek them out.
That said, The lower floors have been abandoned for centuries. It is likely that some, or all of the grounds, are overrun, Valseris added.
Wunderbar, Caden said dryly.
You three wait out here while we go inside and...
I'm sorry, who is the third person in that statement?
Silver interjected sharply. He'd been dreading this.
Who do you think, Silver?
Oh, please, Caden, drop the chivalrous crap for once in your life.
This has nothing to do with...
Caden shot back, his temper getting the better of him for just a second.
You're level 100, right?
Yeah.
And you take a 90% penalty to basically everything, right?
Yeah, but...
What is 10% of 100?
If you'd let me finish instead of being an ass, Silver snapped. You'd know that with all the stat boosts from my items, I'm closer to a level 14 or 15.
He hadn't thought of that, though the smirk on her face as realization crossed his made it almost impossible to see the logic in her argument through the haze of irritation. She had a point, but damn if he wanted to admit it now.
You know we can't risk you.
What risk?
She scoffed.
Caden, I've been playing this game longer than everyone in this party combined. You think I'm going to pull aggro or run into a trap like some idiot noob?
She's right,
Shifty said from the sidelines, saving Caden the shame of having to admit it.
Even underleveled, we're better off having her than having the empty slot.
Thank you,
Silver said with an exasperated sigh.
I'll sit at the back and sling some damage and we'll get this all done faster.
Caden looked over to Celia, then even to Michael for help. The former stared back at him expectantly, while the latter only shrugged in a way that felt like a near-perfect summary of Caden's options.
Fine, he said at last, snapping his fingers and searching out his social menu to add Silver to their active party. On the condition that you stay within 30 yards at all time so that I can cover you if need be.
You won't need to,
Silver replied with such sweetness that he felt his teeth ache.
Before he could interject, she held up a finger.
Yes, fine, I will. Shall we?
Instead of responding to her, Caden turned his attention to the two Elon with their party.
Will you be all right out here alone? Valseris nodded. The beasts in the area are easily dispatched if we come across any at all. We will enter the castle once you send word that it is clear.
All right, Caden nodded. Everyone ready? The group gave their assent, but all eyes turned to Michael, the party fixing him with a unified stare until their meaning finally clicked in his head.
Oh, right, yeah. Command, full equip.
The air around Michael shimmered as piece after piece of his thick armor materialized into existence upon his body. As a juggernaut, he wore nothing but the mightiest plate, the ornate albeit steel engraved with defensive inscriptions and painted a blood red that made the stunning man stand out amidst their party, even if he was now wearing a full helm.
Well then, shall we?
Caden asked with a smirk.
Really?
Silver asked, eyeing him with a blank expression.
Really?
He replied, offering her his most charming smile before turning in the direction of the lower drawbridge. Bastion was the sort of castle you'd only ever see in a film or a video game. The type that could only exist when budgets and time constraints weren't a real concern, and you were willing to ignore a few laws of physics to make the scene picturesque. Even calling it a castle wasn't strictly accurate. Caden wasn't exactly up to date on his ancient architecture, but he thought that walled city might be a better term for the majority of what lay ahead of them. The curtain wall of the city was, by his best guess, about 50 feet tall and at least half that in width. Towers studded the length of it at various intervals, at least 30 by his casual count. The whole of the town was surrounded by a 20-foot-wide moat, though it was curiously absent of water. Perhaps not so curious, considering it is supposedly abandoned, Caden realized as they walked across the creaking wood of the immense drawbridge. The outer walls were merely the first ring in a series of defenses that they had been able to see as they approached the fortress. A second crescent-shaped wall separated the lower city from the upper township, with a single road the only official thoroughfare between the two. And after that, most impressive of all, was Bastion's keep itself. Even as little more than a silhouette against the night sky, the keep was a majestic building. It sat on the edge of the sheer cliff face, with the lake below surrounded by a final wall for conventional defense. It almost reminded Caden of some sort of twisted tree, with branches growing out of the main bulk of the keep to rise up in half a dozen individual spires connected to one another by walkways. Here and there, even those branches grew their own offspring, small offshoots that hung off the edges of the established towers with such flimsy connections that Caden knew some sort of magic had to be involved in their creation. Travel through the city was safe, but unnerving. Silver and Celia provided light with their magic, but there was never enough to cover every darkened nook and cranny or to reach the end of every dim alleyway. By the time they reached the second wall, the whole party was dripping with dread and tension. By the time they arrived at the keep itself and saw the first motion within its walls, it was a relief to see that they'd only have to be fighting the walking dead. "Skill use, observe," Caden said under his breath as they watched the shambling corpses and misshapen skeletons pacing aimlessly back and forth inside the courtyard. Shambling Terror. Level 16. HP, 1,050 out of 1,050. MP, 10 out of 10. TP, 200 out of 200. Skills, unknown. Resistances, none. Weaknesses, wholly 100%. Blood Skeleton. Level 15. HP, 750 out of 750. MP, 0 out of 0. TP, 500 out of 500. Skills, unknown. Resistances, darkness, 50%. Weaknesses, holy, 100%.
"Not exactly much of a threat," Michael said, looking to the others.
"Individually, no," Caden nodded. "But I count 9 that we can see from here. There are probably going to be at least that many that we can't. Likely far more than that. Might be better to take them piecemeal."
"You've got a plan?" Silver asked.
"Nothing clever. They're bunched up too tightly for us to pull them in small groups. But if we pick a fight at range, the skeletons are going to reach us a lot faster than something called shambling terrors."
Silver nodded.
"Considering how slow they are moving, we might be able to just keep backing up and kite the terrors with ranged attacks."
"My thoughts exactly," Caden nodded. "So who is pulling?"
The group looked between one another. In their regular party, it wasn't even a question. Shifty had the longest range by far, so it just made sense for him to pull the targets. Here, however?
"How about we let Mrs. Boomspell do her thing?" Shifty suggested.
"I prefer Ms. Boomspell, thank you very much," Silver chided. "I don't think I have anything that'll hit them all, but I'll get their attention for sure."
"All we can ask of you."
They couldn't see his playboy smile beneath that horned helmet, but it came through all the same in his tone.
"Celia, go with her to the front and be ready to cast something to slow them down if they end up coming at us faster than we expect, all right?" Caden instructed.
There was a twitch of annoyance at the corner of Silver's eye at being babied, but whenever he was uncertain, Caden erred on the side of having a backup plan. Irking Silver was just a happy little bonus.
"Ms. Boomspell, you may fire when ready."
Aye, Field Marshal, Silver shot back with a smirk.
She might not get along with Caden at all times, but she did enjoy his sense of humor more than she cared to admit. What followed was half a minute of spellcasting. Even though most of Silver's most potent magics were locked behind level or stat caps as a result of her death penalty, Caden admired how she worked with what she had. Spell after spell fell from her lips. Directed targeting, minor power of the magi, inner fire, scourge of the undead, and others. Each incantation was a short-term damage boost, stackable with the others to produce a more powerful effect for a correspondingly increased cost. Silver knew what she was doing, and that alone made Caden smile, albeit one he quietly hid behind a gloved hand for fear he might get caught.